This is Radio Free Aslan, broadcasting from occupied territory.
Hello again. My name is Ernesto Todd Morales, and today we will be talking with three individuals currently involved on a regional and national level in pressuring the United States House of Representatives and the Senate into passing the Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors Act, or as it is more commonly known, the DREAM Act. This legislation was introduced by Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois, into the United States Senate and House of Representatives on March 26, 2009. This bill, if passed, would provide certain undocumented immigrant students who graduate from U.S. high schools, who are of good moral character, arrived in the U.S. as minors, and have been in the country continuously for at least 5 years prior to the bill's enactment, the opportunity to earn conditional permanent residency and apply for student loans. The urgency around the passage of this legislation recently experienced an upsurge when four undocumented immigrants who have lived in the United States their entire lives staged a sit-in on May 17th at the Arizona office of Senator John McCain. The four students are Raul Alcarez of Arizona, Lizbeth Mateo of Los Angeles, California, Tanya Unsueta of Chicago, Illinois, Mohammed Abdullahi of Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Yahira Carrillo of Kansas City, Missouri. Their hope was that by staging this sit-in, they would be able to dramatize the urgency of their situation and catalyze mass grassroots mobilization to pass the DREAM Act before June 15th. The date today is June 17th, 2010, and we have two of those brave individuals with us, Mohammed Abdullahi and Lizbeth Mateo. Joining us also is Gabriela Alcazar, who is an organizer with One Michigan working on the passage of the DREAM Act here in Michigan. So let's get to it. Lizbeth, thanks for being here today. And could you tell us what happened at your court hearing in Arizona yesterday?
Yeah, sure. It was actually just very basic. We just had to appear in court. And so the next court day has been set to July 13th. So not much happened yesterday.
Okay. And so, I mean, all four of you that were sitting in there, you've all come out as undocumented. Is the state making any gestures towards, or are they talking about deporting any of you? Or are they talking about, like, what your legal ramifications are at this point?
Tomorrow we have to have a check-in with ICE. So we just have to go to a local ICE office and just report. We don't know when we're going to have our first hearing before an immigration judge. We will be waiting for that information. So right now there isn't much information around the immigration case. We haven't seen a judge yet, so there isn't much information around that.
Okay, so the wheels are turning slowly on this one. I guess that's a good thing. So, Mo, I know that when in talking with Gabriela, who's here at Michigan State with me, she was kind of explaining to me some of the ideas or some of the things that you guys had wanted to get done by June 15. Maybe you could walk us through a little bit, sort of like your guys' decision-making process in looking at June 15th and what it was that really kind of pushed you all to do this sit-in on May 17th at Senator McCain's office.
Yeah, for sure. So kind of the process for this was it was kind of a long-term process, and then also something legislatively that became something that we had to do right away. So for all of us, the four of us that did this action, we've been organizing on the DREAM Act for a number of years, some of us 3 or 4 years, others like, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. And so for us, it's just been about, you know, we've done everything in terms of this, the traditional lobbying, the petitioning, and all these other sorts of things to move the DREAM Act, and every year it's kind of stalled. And so for us, we were at a point where we've pretty much given everything else that we had for this entire movement and for the DREAM Act specifically. And so we're at the point where we realized that we had to do some sort of something that was really a major escalation that would really show our communities that we were willing to take risks. And beyond that, just to show legislators that, like, these are the kind of risks that we have to take, and these are the kind of risks that we're expecting them as leaders to take in calling for the DREAM Act's passage and things like that. And so whenever we called for the DREAM Act to pass, we framed it either by the end of the school year or by June 15th, was sort of to create this level of urgency by, like, we have a clock and the clock is going to tick in the middle of June and the end of June. And the reason we have that clock legislatively is just because in July, towards the end of July, they're going to start the confirmation hearings for the new Supreme Court justice, and then after that, it's going to be August recess, and then after that, it's just going to be really close to the midterm elections. And so, speaking from in terms of, you know, immigration being a hot button topic that people are going to try and stay away from, if this doesn't really come up and if it doesn't pass by end of July, if we want to be very, very liberal in terms of time, it's probably not going to happen anything for the next couple of years until 2013. And so for us, as undocumented youth, really the timeline that we have for the DREAM Act is if nothing happens by like middle of this summer, it's just not going to happen. And so that's why we have the urgency, and June 15th was one of those dates, and we have another one that's coming up soon, where if we don't see some strong movement and we don't see some leadership from some people in the Senate, then our chances of the DREAM Act are really going to be diminished.
Okay, and so, I mean, I've watched Gabriella here go around and really try to drum up a lot of support for in the things that are happening. Gabby, what's happening here in the local area in mid-Michigan or in the state of Michigan to kind of step up the pressure that Mo was talking about a second ago?
Well, here in Michigan, it's our legislative person is Debbie Stabenow, and our job here was to put pressure on her to try to co-sponsor. She co-sponsored in 2007. We want her to co-sponsor again, but because of the political ramifications that it'll have for her in the elections, in the upcoming elections, she's not wanting to take that risk. And we kind of knew that, but we hoped that we could build enough pressure to move her. So a lot of what we're doing is really just trying to mobilize our bases that we had started here in Lansing. Those bases were really small because we really just started organizing with the DREAM Act from, you know, campus, student organizing. And I guess that speaks a little bit to the flaws in student activism is that it has deadlines, and the deadlines are semesters, you know, and it sucks. A lot of people have left, but there's a lot of stuff going on in Detroit. It's mainly where a lot of things have been happening just because they had a much stronger connection with a lot of like the high schools and a lot of the community already from before. And so they've been able to kind of keep the momentum going a lot better than we have here in Lansing. But there's like little things that have been happening in Grand Rapids and Ann Arbor, and here in Lansing, we've had a few rallies but most, I think, of the organizing has been going out of Detroit.
So, Elizabeth, I mean, for where you're at out in California, I mean, obviously the demographics are extremely different than they are here in Michigan. I mean, what sort of activity is going on out there? And I mean, can you give us kind of an idea of the scope of it?
Sure. I can do that. So in California, we have Senator Feinstein, who sits in the Judiciary Committee, and so she's a key target. She's someone that has the power to start moving the DREAM Act at a committee to start working with her other colleagues to do that. And so we've been putting a lot of pressure on her. We've been doing different actions. After our sitting in Senator McCain's office, a couple of days later, there was another civil disobedience action in California targeting Senator Feinstein. And 2 weeks later, there was a sitting in her office doing the same thing. In San Francisco, they've also done very creative ways of putting pressure on Senator Feinstein. She is a co-sponsor, so she claims that co-sponsoring is all she can do. But in reality, we know that she has more power than that. She has the power to move the DREAM Act committee, put it up with a 4-4 for a vote. And so our focus is really on Senator Feinstein to try to get her to champion the DREAM Act.
Okay. Now, I mean, obviously, you know, this is something that we all want to see happen. I guess my question is, I mean, and there's not really anything that we can do about, you know, timing or the times that we're born in or the times that we live in. But I mean, right now is not a good time to be an immigrant in the United States, let alone an undocumented immigrant. I mean, realistically, what is it going to take on our part, on the part of the community, to really make something like this happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a long process, and it's going to require a lot of work. And I think that what we believe is that the DREAM Act is really that first step. And we see a lot of anti-immigrant laws being passed at the local, at the state level. I mean, we don't see anything that's positive for our communities. So we really need to start fighting against those laws, but also start fighting for laws that will actually change that, and that will actually change the way that we are being perceive that our community is being attacked. And so the Dream Act is sort of that first step towards, you know, to keep fighting for other things, to keep fighting for other laws, other measures that will counter all those anti-immigrant measures. And it requires a lot of work and requires a lot of support from the community. And I think that, you know, as Embarking on the Youth, we are doing what we can, but we also need the help of the community. We also need the help of the parents, the adults who many times are sort of afraid to voice their opinion, or afraid to come out and say, you know, I'm undocumented and this is what I believe in or this is what I want.
Okay. And so, Mo, I Gabby and I were talking a little bit beforehand, and we were talking a little bit about organizing strategies and about long-term strategies. I mean, what role do you think that One Michigan, which is an organization that you co-founded here in this state, I mean, what role do you think that something like that can play for these sort of like long-term organizing strategies?
Yeah, absolutely. So whenever we started One Michigan, really working in Detroit primarily and then other places, we just kind of realized that there is no immigrant rights organization that is very youth-centered and that organizes with youth anywhere in Michigan. Specifically, there wasn't anything, at least in Detroit. And so for us, it was just a matter of giving space to the youth that are there that want to channel their energy into something positive and be able to do that. And so they've been working really, really effectively. They've been able to, like Gabby was mentioning, Senator Stabenow, who's really against being open anything regarding immigration, she's offered a meeting with them finally on Tuesday to meet with them in the Detroit office to talk with them in terms of co-sponsoring the DREAM Act and all these sorts of things that they've been able to do just in the course of 3 months. And so something that the Detroit group specifically and One Michigan in general is really branching off and doing is working with high schools where we're going to high schools and we're finding out that, you know, especially in Detroit, about 70% of the students there, and this is what the principals and the teachers tell us, is that are undocumented youth that believe that they have no other future with anything. And so it's just a matter of working with them. And for us, sort of our long-term goal is just being able to provide information to people and be able to educate them in terms of what resources are out there within the community. And then also, like Lizbeth was saying, working on this sort of piecemeal approach to positive legislation instead of being of the mind of we have to get one large bill that's going to affect all of our communities at the same time. We need to realize that there are smaller pieces of measures that we can get passed either on the very, very local level, on the state level, and then on the national level that's going to slowly start helping our communities. And so for One Michigan, it's, you know, we're very focused on the high schools and just being able to connect with the other undocumented youth that are out there and making sure that they realize that they're not alone in this fight.
This is just taking a lot of time and a lot of you know, a lot of people talking about it is because precisely immigrants are seen as being different, as being, you know, the other. And what we see with immigrant youth is that we are no different from other people. We are no different from other youth who are not, you know, who are documented, who are citizens. And so we need to start thinking of immigration as an issue that doesn't only affect immigrants, but also affects everyone else. And that within that immigrant struggle, there's many other issues that also affect us, you know, as human beings. So I think that is probably one of the first steps that we can take to acknowledge that immigration is not an issue that just affects immigrants, but it also affects the larger community.
Okay. All right. So they had one of the things that we were really looking at here at Michigan State in the past couple of years is kind of like this to build the Chicano Studies program that we have here. I mean, do any of you see ethnic studies programs as a way of kind of reaching out into the larger community? I mean, and really, I guess my question is what role do you think that these types of programs? I mean, I noticed, Elizabeth, that you have a BA in Chicano Studies from from Cal State Northridge. I mean, how do we as ethnic studies scholars, as Chicano studies scholars, you know, get off of the community? How do we reach back into the community to kind of do this? And what sort of impact do you think that has? I mean, I throw that out to anybody that wants to answer on that one.
When I was a student at Cal State Northridge, one of the things that for me was, I guess the one reason why I chose Chicano studies is because it was sort of like the only field that I some connection with being an immigrant myself, working with immigrant youth. I thought and I felt that Chicano studies was sort of like that one field that was really open and was really inclusive of immigrants. And one thing we made very clear in the program that I was part of is that the Chicano movement is a continuous movement, that it hasn't, that yes, the 60s and 70s were sort of like those years in which it wasn't at its peak, but it's a continuous movement, and there's other communities within the struggle that are also part of it, and that immigration and undocumented people are part of that struggle. And so we were really inclusive of all of that, all of that history, and the struggles of undocumented youth. And that was really, I think that was very effective, at least in school, where the Mechistas and the Chicano Studies Department was very aware and was very inclusive of the struggles of undocumented immigrants, and they made it part of the curriculum, and they educated other people. And the larger community, the community that, you know, was surrounding the school and the school itself was able to recognize that.
Okay. All right. One of the things that I saw on Facebook when I was kind of checking out your guys' pages, there's a quote from Mo's support, Muhammad Abdullahi, Pass the Dream Act Now. That's a Facebook page, which people who are listening to this podcast can look up. But one of the things that you said, Mo, was never in our history has it been American to deny people their civil rights. We have decided to peacefully resist to encourage our leaders to pass the Dream Act and create a new standard for immigration reform based on education, hard work, equality, and fairness. Now, I like your quote. I don't necessarily agree with it, because I would actually say that American history is rift with incidences of people being denied their civil and their human rights. And I mean, so, but even thinking about it from either one of those perspectives, I mean, is this really a civil rights issue? I mean, or is it really a human rights issue?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely both of them. And whenever we put out that quote specifically, it wasn't to say that that's specifically true 100%,
sure.
But it was more so put out there as a challenge to our leaders in terms of, like, we're giving you two options here. What judgment are you going to make? And this is the judgment you make. This is what you're essentially saying if you choose to go the opposite path. And so it was more of a challenge to our leaders with that quote. For us, it's both a civil rights issue, it's a human rights issue, and as a movement, we've definitely been trying to do our best to connect it with all those issues. We've had students that were from Massachusetts. There's an organization that are called the Student Immigrant Movement, and out of Massachusetts in September, they actually did a journey where they contacted several members of the Little Rock Nine from Little Rock, Arkansas, one of the first schools that was desegregated. And they actually made a trip from Massachusetts to Little Rock Nine, Arkansas, and they met with several members of the Little Rock Nine and who talked to them, and they shared stories, and everyone agreed, you know, this is something that's completely unfair, and this is something that we have to collectively work towards changing, and these issues still exist in our society and all those sorts of things. And so for us, it definitely is a human rights and a civil rights issue, and it's just a matter of us as a movement being able to connect our struggle and make our struggle about the continuous narrative of the other struggles. And that's just another way for us to be able to sustain this movement just beyond a piece of legislation, which is what the DREAM Act is, so that we can continue to have these efforts within our communities to better them, because it's not going to end after the DREAM Act.
Excellent. So, I mean, are you two or the four of you, are you confined to the state of Arizona right now?
No, we're not confined to the state of Arizona. We actually had a really nice judge, and we think it was mostly probably because of the very positive publicity we had, and just the mere fact that anybody that looks at us can see us as being, you know, just as American as the next person kind of thing. So anyways, we were not restricted just to the state of Arizona. We were pretty much able to go anywhere. And in terms of the court date yesterday, our attorney was successful in terms of getting the judge to agree that we don't have to appear and he can appear on our behalf. And so other than just having to check in with immigration once a month, for now, we're not really restricted anywhere, which is very helpful because we plan on organizing pretty much all across the country to really escalate and get the DREAM Act however we have to. And so, yeah, we're not restricted to Arizona.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. That I imagine that it's pretty hot there right now. Gabby, tell us what's going on here in Michigan. What's next? What's happening?
Actually, right now, what's next for us in One Michigan is we're trying to actually build more of a solid structure with the organization so that we can keep going beyond DREAM Act. That and there was just an event in Detroit. So we're continuing to build our networks and within our community so that we can continue organizing and continue pushing for DREAM, but also looking internally how we can make sure that One Michigan is going to continue beyond DREAM. So it's mainly what we've been doing right now and where we're at.
Okay. And how would people in this area? Okay. It's a two-part question. How do people in this area get involved with DREAM Act or One Michigan? And how do people on a national level get involved? Like the people who are in Alaska listening to our podcast, how do they get involved in this?
Well, there's a lot of calling in, really bugging a lot of legislators, making sure we're flooding them, all of them, not even just Debbie Stabenow, you know, flooding like our allies, you know, letting them know like, hey, we need you to step up, and, you know, people that we still need to have, you know, support the DREAM Act. So one of the biggest things I would say is just flooding the phone lines of our legislators and letting them know that there's people out there that are in support of it and that want this legislation. Signing up, going to our website and signing up so that they can get updates on any rallies, any actions of support that will be happening in the next month or so.
All right.
Or more.
Well, I'm sure it'll be going on for a while. Okay. I think that I would like to give you guys the opportunity, if you want, to make any last statements. Mo, I wanted to tell you that I really respect your decision to do this. I think it's very brave, given the fact that you're an openly gay man, that you have a lot really riding on this, and I really respect what you've done, brother. I just want you to know that. And so I just want to give you two any last chance to say anything to the people who are going to listen to them.
On the program and taking time for this, just want to say that everybody that really took action and everybody who's working all across the country are taking big risks every single day. And so for us, it was just in solidarity with them.
Sure.
And I would just urge everyone that's listening, like, it's really, really easy to get involved. And Gabby was mentioning the phone call. You know, it's just really easy just to call Senate. It's just not a free number, but it's just 202-224-2131, I believe it is. And you can just call and speak to an operator and give them your zip code, and they'll transfer you to the senator's office. So really just calling and just voicing your support is probably the easiest thing you can do. But to get more active, I would just get in contact with the One Michigan members there. And we're, you know, we need as much support as we can, whether you're parents or students or whatever the case may be. But yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks again for taking the time and having us on.
No, I'm glad you guys came. Elizabeth, you get the last word.
Yeah, well, thank you. I just want to thank everyone and encourage everyone else to, who's listening, to get involved, to put the fear aside and really join this movement, because, you know, we're doing everything we can, but we also need a lot of help and a lot of support from people, because it's a volunteer-based campaign, volunteer-based organization that we work with. So I just wanted to put that out there and also thank everyone for listening.
Okay, that's all we have for now. I want to thank Mo, Elizabeth, and Gabriella for being here today and for the work they're doing to force this government, and really all of us, to take a hard look at immigration, education, and where our commitment to human rights lie. If you want to learn more about the DREAM Act and how you can get involved in making education accessible for all people, you can check out the DREAM Act portal website at dreamact.info. That's dreamact.info. If you live in the state of Michigan and want to get involved directly with people here organizing to make a difference, check out www.dreamactivist.org. That's www.dreamactivist.org. I also want to give a special shout out to our producers, Roberto Reyes and Louis Moreno Jr., the guys behind the curtain that make us all sound a lot smoother than we really are. My name is Ernesto Todd Morales, and this is another podcast of Radio Free Aslan, brought to you by the Chicano Development Center, doing our part to keep the dream alive. This monthly podcast is brought to you by the Chicano Development Center, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to education and political empowerment through grassroots coalition building. We believe in the indigenous sovereignty of the Chicano people in the United States, and that true social and political change begins with the people. Our style of low-intensity organizing endeavors to build intentional communities within greater communities. The motivating force behind low-intensity organizing is to constantly challenge the status quo as to the treatment and economic status, not only of Chicanos and other indigenous people, but of all oppressed people. At the Chicano Development Center, we believe that resistance begins with education, organization, and preparation. We believe that raza must take action on a regular basis, not just in times of crisis.
Jays, what we love the best.